Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Cornerstone Bank, a family-owned bank providing custom investments, trust, and estate planning services since 1882 with 42 central Nebraska locations. CornerstoneConnect.com. Cornerstone Bank, building trust on a solid foundation. And The Ross. Opening today is Wild Nights with Emily, a humorous and bold reexamination of the life of poet Emily Dickinson. And Buddy, an ode to the fighting spirit and deep bond between service dogs and their owners. Continuing is Red Joan, starring Judi Dench. Details at theross.org.
Good morning, and welcome to Friday Live here on NET Radio, live from the Mill in Lincoln's Haymarket. I'm Genevieve Randall. This week, I'll talk with an artist whose work challenges you to respond to crisis, even those in our own state, like the recent flooding. I'll also have a conversation with Nebraska poets about a new anthology, and the Sturr Museum in Grand Island has some new things going on, including events on Memorial Day and an exhibition about early medicine in Hall County. If you'll be away from your radio, you don't have to miss a conversation. You can stream Friday Live online at netnebraska.org or listen using the NET Nebraska mobile app. We'll start this week with the Community Players. Their show, Lucky Stiff, opens in Beatrice on June 7th and runs for 2 weeks. Jamie Ulmer is executive director, and Steve Pearson plays Harry Witherspoon in Lucky Stiff. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Described as a zany musical farce, so tell me about this show a little bit.
So this show can probably be best described as, if you remember the movie Weekend at Bernie's from back in the late 80s, it's the musical version of Weekend at Bernie's. The character that Steve plays finds out he's going to inherit $6 million, but in order to do it, he has to take his dead uncle's taxidermied body on a whirlwind vacation to Monte Carlo. And there's other people after the money, and hilarity ensues from there.
You know, it's funny, Steve, your character, we mentioned, is a shoe salesman, and you hear about this uncle through kind of a postcard. It reminds me of those email scams, but analog in this case, right?
Correct.
through the postcard. So tell me a little bit about playing your character and what your character's like.
Well, I have been obsessed with this musical since it first came out in 1988, and so was really glad that Community Players had it on their season and I had a chance to audition. Harry Witherspoon is kind of this put upon person who's letting life pass him by. The show opens with him doing inventory on Friday night, and he's aware of the fact that life is passing him by while he's sitting in the shoe store with not real much activity in life and not many prospects on the horizon. So,
I mean, inventory on a
aware of the fact that life is passing him by while he's sitting in the shoe store with not real much activity in life and not many prospects on the horizon. So,
I mean, inventory on a Friday.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's the whole song. It's like he sings about inventory on a Friday night.
No.
So getting the opportunity to be pulled out of his reserved little shell of a life and get challenged in lots of different ways kind of forces him to act in ways that he probably wouldn't have had none of this happened.
And you said you were thinking about this show for years?
Yes.
Wait, how did you first hear about it?
I was one of those people who would go through the musical theater section of Barnes & Noble and look for the most obscure musical that I'd never heard of before and go, oh, that CD, that looks like something that nobody else has. I'll buy that one. And so I happened to buy this one probably in the late 80s or early 90s.
Yeah, it's a really kind of a forgotten gem of a musical. It's one of the first shows written by the same songwriting team that wrote the musicals Ragtime and Anastasia and Seussical. You know, so this is their first musical collaboration together. And it's really fun because you can hear shades of some of their future work in the songs of this show and just kind of how their work evolves. If you're familiar with their work, you're like, oh, that sounds just like this song in Seussical, or that sounds a little bit like this moment in Anastasia.
How do Vinny and Rita play into the story?
So Rita is the corpse's ex-girlfriend, and Vinny is her poor brother. And
Optometrist brother, yes.
Oh, okay.
Rita has, like, Thelma from Scooby-Doo kind of glasses, so whenever she does not have her glasses, she can't see anything. And so she drags him to Monte Carlo in pursuit of the money. And then at one point, she sees the body sitting in a wheelchair and assumes that he's still alive and sings she belts out this kind of bluesy ballad to him about how, I forgive you, let's get together.
I'm sure that I've asked you this before at some point, but when you're putting together a farce like this with all this comedy, how do you guys not just crack up in a scene?
Well, for me, staging this show, one of the things that I've actually been thinking about, because the body is played by an actual person, you know, he sits in the wheelchair for 99%
of
the show.
What's the audition for that part? Yeah.
Well, he did have a bunch of voiceovers that he had to record, we were looking for a voice actor there, but one thing that I've thought about in the staging of it is, okay, what kind of wacky things can I do to Kurt, the actor playing it, so that he's just kind of, that the audience kind of knows, like, that's a real person. Oh my gosh, how is he not laughing?
Perfect.
You know, so that was one of the kind of little touchstones for me as we've been blocking the show.
Well, I've been talking here this morning with Jamie Ulmer and Steve Pearson about the Beatrice Community Players production of Lucky Stiff, a zany musical farce. Shows are June 7th through the 9th and June 14th through the 16th. Jamie and Steve, break a leg.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For more about this or anything that you hear about on today's show, head to the Friday Live page for links at netnebraska.org. On Friday Live, it's been a little while since we checked in with artist Jave Yoshimoto. The Omaha-based artist has created a series of paintings and sculptural work on the theme of humanitarian crisis. That work is in the exhibition Tempestuous Microcosm at the Union for Contemporary Arts Wanda D. Ewing Gallery in Omaha. Yoshimoto volunteered in Greece, working with refugees, and collected stories in Nepal after the 2015 earthquake. The work will be up at Union for Contemporary Art through June 29th. Jave, welcome back to Friday Live.
Thank you for having me back.
In addition to painting, I caught the word sculptural in there in my intro. You've got this whole body of work using laser cutting on wood. I have an example of one of the pieces. It looks like a cell phone, as if it were, you know, made out of wood. There's lots of layers that build up sort of a 3D effect. The imagery is of definitely people in crisis. You see a child being carried by a man in a helmet. Front and center, there's a woman who looks like she's crying, but maybe also bleeding. A woman next to her covering her face. And then what really grabs you, I think, is when you look up and you see the word Aleppo, and you see the symbols for either answering or ignore. How did you come up with the idea to put these scenes in a cell phone face like that?
Well, I think at first it was initially about seeing all this varied imagery online and also having worked with some of the refugees and hearing their stories. So I wanted to see what it was like and that forced their exit out of their own home country. And being able to see all these different destructions, it's basically end up being a collage of different imagery that I put together. And we see all these images typically through our cell phones anyway these days, so it made sense. But because cell phone is a communication device, so this is a call about helping people and to really pay attention to what's happening around the world, and the audience have a choice to either, you know, be involved or not.
When did you go to Greece and why? Why were you inspired to actually go there yourself?
In our previous interview, we talked about The Scroll and how it was impacted by the tragedy in Japan with the big earthquake and whatnot.
This is a 30-foot-long scroll that has detailed pictures of some of the results and effects of the Fukushima disaster.
Yes. From that, I was seeing everything through computer screens, TV news, cell phones and whatnot, and I was traumatized to a point where I had to respond and act. But then one of the things that was very blatant and oddly obvious to me was that I'm relying on news and information from other sources as opposed to gathering my own stories. So in 2015, when I received the Joan Mitchell Foundation grant, it gave me an opportunity. They asked me what I wanted to do with the money, and I decided I need to go collect my own stories. I need to interview people on my own and not have like a filtered version of a particular news, but to really find out what the ground zero level stories are. So that's what inspired me to go to Nepal after the earthquake, and after seeing that boy on the beach shore, I want to find out more about the refugee crisis in Syria and also what's happening in Greece. So that's how I became inspired to go, to find my own stories, to find these pictures, to try to make more work that's more genuine or more sincere than, again, having a glass screen to see through some another lens and filter.
In the stories you collected from Nepal after the 2015 earthquake there, what's an example of a story that made it into your work?
There are a lot of stories I'm still trying to process, but one story I haven't yet made is a man named Rami who was actually trying to catch up with his family. He's actually not from Aleppo, but from Damascus. He saw tanks rolling through the city and the city was being destroyed, so he knew he had to flee. His family had already made it to Germany and he wanted to follow suit, but he had to go through Turkey and then had to pay the human smugglers to get on the boat in the middle of the night. As he was setting sail, they had to book it to try to make it past the Coast Guard of Turkey so they won't be forced to return. But because they were going so fast that the ship capsized when it hit the wave, so he and his fellow passengers all was overboard. He was literally under the boat. And he luckily found a life jacket that he could grab onto. So he got underneath the boat, grabbed the life jacket, and then found that one of the fellow passengers was underwater. It was a four-year-old girl. So he grabbed her, came up to the top of the surface, and then as he looked around, he could hear our people screaming, but he couldn't really see anything because it was too dark. And then he told me about how he saw the lights on the shores of Greece, so he tried to swim. For 8 hours straight, he was trying to swim with, clutching onto the life jacket on one hand and the girl on the other hand. And he realized that the girl has been dead for hours. But he was also getting really tired, so getting sleepy. And he didn't want to let go of the girl because he felt like he was going into the open waters that he just didn't want to die alone.
Yeah.
But eventually, he was found by the Greek Coast Guard and was brought to shore the following morning. So he survived the ordeal. So that's a story that really impacted me. And that's a story I still have yet to paint, but I want to paint. And the part of the reason why I started doing these laser cuts is because I injured my arm and I couldn't pick up a paintbrush anymore. So I started drawing things digitally. I started building things with the laser cutter. And this was my first attempt. And it became something I was pretty decent at. So I went with it. So for the past 2 years, I've been making these laser cut relief sculpture pieces.
It's amazing to see that you've gone from having that injury to finding another outlet or another way.
Yeah, and part of the challenge was that in my previous works, I relied heavily on color to make an impact, to draw on people and to really look at the composition. But now, working without color, I'm forced to use the strength of my composition to see if that still captivates people's interest.
On social media, I even saw a laser piece that you did following the flooding here in Nebraska.
Yes.
Where's that piece at the moment?
The piece will be in the show. And I'm actually selling a small replica-sized pieces of it. And that fits in your pocket. It's about 2 inches by 5 inches. And I'm donating 100% of the proceeds from that sale to a nonprofit that goes towards charity to help the flood victims. At the moment, I think I'm looking at the Catholic Social Services because I know they did some work with them.
Being so close to disaster all the time definitely has effects on people. How do you cope with that?
Sometimes through humor in my own work. if you take a close look at some of my works, there's sometimes the presence of popular cultural icons, or there might be a cat pushing a watermelon and things like that to try to make things light. But it's also like an accessible point for people to kind of see this composition and then say, well, wait, there's something else going on in this whole composition. Yeah.
Well, Dave Yoshimoto has work in the Wanda Ewing Gallery at the Union for Contemporary Art in Omaha. That work is up through June 29th. Other upcoming exhibitions include solo shows in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Asheville, North Carolina, and Las Vegas, Nevada. So, Dave, I'm glad we had the time to catch up with your latest work, and I wish you safe travels as you put up all those upcoming exhibitions.
Thank you.
You can link to more about Dave Yoshimoto and Tempestuous Microcosm at Union for Contemporary Art through the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio. Carson Vaughn is a Nebraska writer who by chance learned about an unusual tourist attraction in the town of Royal. On this week's All About Books, he tells host Pat Leach how the small Nebraska town suddenly got a zoo.
For a period of about 20-some years, from 1986 to 2005, essentially, they had a small roadside zoo that kind of snowballed on itself, and by 2005, what started out as a single chimpanzee was then four chimpanzees, lions, tigers, too many animals, frankly, for a town of 65 people.
Here an interview with Nebraska writer Carson Vaughn about his new book, Zoo Nebraska, The Dismantling of an American Dream. It's online at netnebraska.org/allaboutbooks. This is Friday Live, broadcasting on NET Radio from the Mill in downtown Lincoln this week. Ahead on the show in about 7 minutes, two different Ta-Da Theater events, including a Lincoln premiere for one show that started as a graphic memoir. Sticking with the literary in the next conversation, a new anthology titled Healing the Divide includes poems of kindness and connection. The book was edited by James Cruz, who studied at UNL and now lives and works in Vermont, with a preface written by Ted Kuzma. James joins me this morning along with poet Marge Sizer, who is one of the readers joining James at the book launch and reading at Indigo Bridge Books tomorrow from 1 to 2:30 p.m. It's great to have you both here.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
We'll get some of the other readers at the event tomorrow in a second here. James, how did you come to have Ted Kuzer write the preface of your new anthology?
Well, Ted and I still keep in touch. I studied pretty closely with him when I was at UNL in the PhD program and worked for his column, American Life and Poetry. So we still sometimes trade observations and poems. And when the idea came to me, Ted is one of the kindest people that I know. So I thought, who better to write a preface to a book of poems about kindness than Ted Kuzer?
What's the idea behind the title, I guess, if you want to describe Healing the Divide? I mean, it's a little self-descriptive, but...
Yeah, well, I'm not sure it is for everyone. I've had a variety of reactions to it. My original concept was just, especially after the last presidential election, no matter which side you were on, there was just so much negativity in the air, and it felt like the divisions between us were a little more obvious. And so I just thought, what could possibly heal that? And I think one of the things that we can do is focus on people coming together, helping each other out, connecting, really drawing attention to that instead of the negativity. So, in other words, focusing on what's right and not just what's wrong.
Others reading at your event tomorrow include Pat Emile, Matt Mason, who is Nebraska's newest poet laureate, and there are some young poets coming to read, too. What's their story, and how did they get involved?
I really wanted to have young people. That's one divide, and for their energy and their excitement. However, they're not going to be able to come tomorrow, so we'll have to have energy ourselves, James.
We can do it.
I think you can do it, both of you. Did you bring a poem, maybe to give us as an example today?
Yeah, absolutely. This one is called Kindness by Anya Silver. It's one of my favorite poems by her, and I was so happy to include it. Last week, a nurse pulled a warm blanket from a magical cave of heated cotton and laid it on my lap, even wrapping my feet. She admired my red sandals. Once, a friend brought me a chicken she'd roasted and packed with whole lemons. I ate it with my fingers while it was still warm. Kindnesses appear, then disappear so quickly that I forget their brief streaks. They vanish, while cruelty pearls its durable shell. Goodness streams like hot water through my hair and down my skin, and I'm able to live again with the ache. Love wakens the world. Kindness is my mother sending me a yellow dress in the mail for no reason other than to watch me twirl.
Thank you so much for reading that. You know, what struck me right off the bat as you started reading is that I could just feel that warmth of the blanket in the opening part, and that's something that's universal.
Absolutely.
So the poetry in the book is from writers of all different backgrounds, but something like that universal theme. How did you go about collecting poems along this theme?
Well, first, what I was looking for was poems about kindness, poems about people coming together, and I wanted poems that were more universal and that could be relatable or accessible to a wide variety of people. I love abstract poetry, all kinds of different poetry, but this anthology was about kind of bringing people from all backgrounds into the fold and showing them what poetry can do, that it can be simple, relatable, and my hope is that people will share these poems with other people that they know.
And Marge, you're also one of the readers at the event. What kinds of work are you bringing with you for this tomorrow?
Well, for one thing, I do want to read other poems from the anthology. Ted says in the foreword that it's a book where he marked poems to come back to, and I found that I did that too, because they are comforting, inspiring. And so we'll also read some work that isn't in the anthology that has to do with connection and kindness, but particularly want to highlight some of these, not that I know the poets, but I know the moment, as you're talking about. It's a universal moment that they're talking about.
What's most important to the two of you as this event happens tomorrow? What do you hope that people who come to listen, what do you hope they come away with after this event?
I think for me, if people come to the event and say, wow, I didn't know poetry could do that, or I didn't know poetry could be so relatable, if they come and say, I didn't expect to be filled up or feel that sense of warmth that you mentioned before.
Yes, for sure.
You feel the same way.
To connect.
To connect.
To connect by poems about the ordinary life, a moment in an ordinary life.
I've been talking here about a new poetry anthology and a reading event to go along with that anthology. The editor is James Cruz. Marjorie Sizer will also read along with several other poets. The anthology is titled Healing the Divide, Poems of Kindness and Connection. And that event is at Indigo Bridge Books tomorrow from 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. James and Marge, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Genevieve.
This is Friday Live, serving your community anywhere that might be. NET Radio is Nebraska's public radio network. Online, netnebraska.org. Thanks for listening to Friday Live here on NET Radio. We'll highlight a couple of events next happening at the Sturr Museum of the Prairie Pioneer in Grand Island. They've opened their outdoor exhibits for the summer season. They also host an 1899 Memorial Day event and have a summer exhibit of artifacts and photographs featured called Pioneer Medicine, Physicians on the Platte. Joe Black is executive director for the Sturr Museum, and he joins me now. Great to talk with you again, Joe.
It's always good to be on NET.
Well, thanks so much. So in this exhibit, what kinds of artifacts and people will we find in Pioneer Medicine?
We just redid the Sturr building in 2015, and one of the permanent exhibits that really seemed to catch people's attention was a small section on health and beauty and the different things that women did to kind of meet the beauty standards of the time. And so we took that interest and thought we really could expand on that because we have really interesting artifacts in our collections, you know, like World War I first aid kits that came back from soldiers, pictures of doctors and the different histories of the hospitals here in Hall County, the interesting folks who served as folks that helped with medical issues here in town, whether they were formal doctors or the barber on the frontier towns that kind of served as the impromptu surgeon in many of those small communities before they got doctors, you know, all those kinds of things. And so when you come to the store, you'll see our first floor gallery, the Dinsdale Gallery, has information on local doctors and the hospitals and artifacts from their work and what they did. And the second floor is more of a general look at what the pioneer medicines had, you know. So what were those traveling dentists like? What did they have? You know, what were the general doctors? What did they have available for you to do? And then amongst all those, like I said, is World War I loomed large for folks out here in Nebraska in that it affected them. They sent their sons. They sent the Red Cross sent nurses. You get folks off the farm, as they said, and around the world, and that had huge lasting impacts. Well, medicine and treatment and all those kinds of things had huge leaps during the war, part of staying alive or unfortunately not coming back. And so we wanted to tell as kind of a full and a rich a story as we could and get some of those really fascinating artifacts out of our storage and conservation spaces to the public.
Since the exhibit focuses on physicians in Hall County, are there particular photos that include specific doctors or practitioners?
There are photos and pieces, and so folks that are from Hall County may recognize names, and there's some that we actually have in the exhibit upstairs. We talk about Dr. Flippin and his practice. So, yeah, I would definitely encourage folks that had family out here or that grew up here, they'll recognize some of those names. They'll recognize some of those pictures. But even if you're not from here, the pictures are amazing and the artifacts sometimes make you shiver just a little bit as well and maybe make you not so queasy about going to your own doctor's appointment in our modern times.
On Monday, May 27th, Memorial Day, you're going to be hosting another event. What do you have planned for that?
Out at Stewart, we have our own 1890s railroad town. And so our job is to bring the past to life. And so when you come out on Memorial Day this year, it will be 1899. And you will see everything that would happen on a typical Memorial Day in a small Nebraska town at that time. There will be a procession at 10 a.m. There'll be band concerts in the afternoon and a program. And so what you will see is you will see the members of the GAR, which is the Grand Army of the Republic. It's kind of like the VFW for the Civil War veterans. And they are the ones who will be leading the processions to remember the honored dead. We will hear from people in town, townspeople giving programs and speeches and talking about the importance of remembering Memorial Day and the folks that it represents. And town will be decked out in its finery. We'll have games for the kids and to play as well. And you see the blacksmith working and the tinsmith working, and step inside to the period homes and see what life was like in the 1890s.
Over the last year, since the last time we've talked, have there been any changes at the Stuhr Museum?
Well, this last summer we did open the Peter Stuhr House, which is one of the homes that our founder Leo Stuhr spent his childhood in. We opened that in the middle of summer, so it wasn't there at the beginning of our summer season. It has been a great addition to the museum, and it's right down in Railroad Town. So if you come down for Memorial Day or any day during the summer, you'll be able to see it and be inside. And we just have used that for not only for our visitors, but for classes and for some rentals as well, cooking in the winter and talking about what life was like in Nebraska during the winter. And we're adding some new classes as well because we have this new amazing space. And so that's one of the big changes we have. And we're also adding a new event in cooperation with some local folks who do horse and buggy competitions. And so we're going to hold that out here in conjunction with those folks, and that'll be coming up here in June on the 22nd. We try not to let the grass grow under our feet and offer lots of different things for folks.
Joe Black is the executive director for the Stoehr Museum in Grand Island. That Memorial Day event there is from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. The summer exhibit, Pioneer Medicine, Physicians on the Platte, is up tomorrow through September 8th. Joe, thanks for your time.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And to link to more about these events in Grand Island or anything on this week's show, head to the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio, informing and inspiring Nebraska with unique programming. This is NET Radio. Stay with Friday Live to learn about a performance you can hear anywhere in the state, and I'll have highlights from our arts calendar coming up. Next, I'm joined by some folks from Tada Theater to talk about two different shows, Leading Ladies, An Evening of Song, and Fun Home. Chris Rook is in Leading Ladies. Chris is also the music director and cast in Fun Home, so a multitasker, in other words, Chris.
Cover everything today.
Nice to have you here. And Matthew Clegg, you're in Fun Home as
I
well.
I am, yes.
And as we talked about, not in Leading Ladies.
Not in Leading Ladies.
I don't know why. Well, good morning and thanks for being on the show. The show Fun Home started as a graphic memoir. So how did that translate to the stage?
Well, do you want to?
Really well, actually. The creators took a lot of thought into how to do that and how to capture that impact from the novel in the musical as well.
And how to travel from present to past, because she's remembering all of this. And that's what a graphic memoir is too, about dealing with her past, which I think is one cool thing that I think everybody, no matter what your circumstances are, you can identify with, trying to go back to your past and figure out, you know, what was my relationship with my dad or my mom, like what really happened. Yeah. And the set design is just so so imaginative. Bob Rook, the artistic managing director, and I don't have her name memorized, Katie, who's doing the scenic design, just have this great concept where the set looks like one of Alison Bechdel's graphic novels, like you are in one of her drawings, just right. How it's, the living room is drawn and all the little bookcases and details, so yeah. You are going, looking into her mind as she's remembering all this stuff. It's just really fun.
It really is, yeah.
It is really cool to see the photos from that. It reminded me, I don't know if you've seen these touring exhibits where you can be part of a painting, you can kind of go sit in it.
Yeah. Right.
It's like on stage, you've brought this book into kind of the 3D world from the 2D world in a way.
Yeah.
So Matt, who is your character in Fun Home and what's he like?
Sure. Well, my character's, his name is Bruce Bechdel, and he is Allison's father, and he is he's very, very highly opinionated of himself, at least outwardly, but he's probably fairly typical of a father around that time period, but also not, because he has a secret that he's kind of holding inside and having to deal with that pressure. And,
And Chris, your character?
Yeah, I'm playing Helen, Allison's mom, and she's just trying to keep everything going, trying to keep the family together, trying to keep, everything polished and looking good on the outside. And growing up in the 70s, that's where it's set too, that this happened during the 70s. And so it kind of bringing back memories for me, for someone who was a kid during the 70s.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that just now. What do you hope audience members come away with after seeing Fun Home?
That is something everybody can relate to.
Yeah.
I think you've got, no matter what your circumstances are, you've got to, if you're going to have peace, you have to look at things as they really are and look at your relationship with your family as they really, really are. and take away, you know, the positive things that along with the difficult things in all family relationships, there's positive things too. And that I think in the final analysis, that's what's comes away from this one. And if you see our logos or even on our page for Tada, you'll see an image of the little girl with her arms out playing airplane with flying on her dad. I mean, I did that when I was a little kid with my dad,
right.
And that's like the final is kind of like how the imagery that she's remembering, how the show begins, how it ends, and kind of, you know, after all that, that's what her relationship was with her father.
Yeah, and that's kind of the almost the sum up of the show is that she chooses that, yes, you know, these terrible things happened, but also there were some good things as well, and you can't just remember one or the other. You have to, you know, process and remember both.
And there was love there.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, we need to switch gears for just a little bit here, Chris.
Yeah.
You are also in the leading ladies show coming up. What are you performing for this show?
Well, I'm looking forward to this. This is a cabaret that we're doing for Tada as a fundraiser. Help us keep our tickets, you know, at $20. And it's actually going to be in the Comedy Loft Club where we have more room, already have a bar set up. So
and it's
nice
in the same building as Tada.
Yeah,
so it's
right across the hall, and it's nice, relaxed setting like all our cabarets. People can kick back, enjoy a wide variety of music. There's going to be 7 of us women performing, and you'll hear things from Dream Girls. Megan Smith is doing Memory from Cats, and we've got a Cole Porter standard. I'm doing some Rodgers and Hammerstein. I'm also going to be doing a song from Fun Home, one of Helen's songs. But
nice.
But I'm doing a couple of songs I thought would be interesting just for me, for my take on this, of doing a song from The King and I and from My Fair Lady, just talking about how the leading lady who people really learned these songs from listening to was Never Seen at All by Marnie Nixon, and how, you know, she did Maria for West Side Story. She sang for Eliza Doolittle in My Fair Lady and for Deborah Kerr's part in The King and I, and nobody knew it for years, but that's how so
that's
many people
take.
Learned
yeah.
that. So there's a leading lady that actually was behind the scenes.
The behind the scenes leading lady.
Yeah, the behind the scenes leading lady. So,
well, Chris Rook is joined for the leading lady show in an evening of song by Angela Onaha, Elisa Bellflower, Lisa Taylor, Megan Smith, Catherine Bobst, Sean Harner, and Judy Anderson, a full lineup of folks. And that is Sunday, May 19th,
Sundays.
Coming right up, Sunday.
7 o'clock.
At 7 p.m., and as Chris said, in the Comedy Loft Cabaret. And then the show Fun Home, in which Chris Rook and Matthew Clegg are cast members. That runs at Tada Theater June 6th through the 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
Chris and Matt, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed that interview or an earlier interview and you wish you could hear it again, you can play today's show as many times as you like online or download it. We podcast the show each week, and you can look for that later this afternoon on our Facebook page or on our website. The address is netnebraska.org. When you go to the theater, you take a seat, but artists are contributing seats to one theater company.
I think maybe it was just a play on words, cherish, because we cherish the Angels Theater Company, and it kind of grew from there. One of the great things is that these artists have embraced not only chairs, but other things. Like Diane Gabelhaus has a beautiful stained glass window that we're going to be auctioning off.
Learn more about a unique event and artists' contributions to that event on this week's Friday Live Extra. Download wherever you get your podcasts or listen online at netnebraska.org/radio. I'm joined by Robert Goldberg next, host of Nebraska Concerts, here to tell us what's coming up this weekend that he's excited about.
Thanks, Genevieve. As you know, not everyone can get out to a performance or other event this weekend, but we bring you one every Sunday at 1 Central. And I think a highlight this will be the Lincoln Symphony. It's a concert that was called An Evening with Anton. And Anton is Anton Miller, who's been the concertmaster with the Lincoln Symphony for as long as anyone can remember, including Ed Polacek, who's been there about as long. So Anton's playing Brahms's violin concerto, so that's going to be a wonderful concert.
Anton Miller does seem to be sort of a fixture around here, and I think a lot of people don't realize that he actually flies to Nebraska from Baltimore every time he plays a concert.
For every concert, yeah, and Ed himself flies in from Baltimore as well.
We feel like they're Nebraskans. They almost feel like they're Nebraskans as well, but we actually get some, you know, national performers here in the state.
We do, and Ed and Anton perform all across the country.
Robert Goldberg is the host of Nebraska Concerts, and you can listen to this week's show Sunday at 1 p.m. Central, and you can stream it online. And learn more on the Nebraska Concerts page at netnebraska.org/radio. Be sure to check out the arts calendar on our website, both to make plans and to add your event. The address is netnebraska.org/radio. Just click events. Here's some highlights. The Museum of Nebraska Art in Kearney opens their Sculpture Garden series. The featured artist for 2019 is Les Bruning, an Omaha-based artist working in casting and welding. This Sunday in Elmwood, the Best Reader Aldridge House hosts a period fashion show with clothing from 1890 to the present day, as well as a mother-daughter tea party. And in Manly at the Loft Community Theater on Sunday, a free staged reading is happening as part of the Loft's Script Club. That's at 2 p.m. For more information about these and other events, visit our website, netnebraska.org/radio.
Support for humanities-related programming on NET Radio comes from Humanities Nebraska, delivering opportunities to engage with history and culture on the web at humanitiesnebraska.org. And support for programming comes from History Nebraska, sharing Nebraska history through brown bag lectures, bike tours, and summer kids camp. Connecting people to the mysteries and moments that shape individual stories, the story begins at history.nebraska.gov.
Up on Friday Live, music about love and longing on a concert in Lincoln. More about that in about 11 minutes. If you'd like to spend an evening in Lincoln with artist Susan Wood and some of her work, you may do so on Friday, May 31st. Spending some time with me this morning to tell us more about that is Sue Wood. Good morning.
Hello, how are you?
Great to have you back on Friday Live. Yeah. This event is described as a celebration of art inspired from around the globe. Susan, how many countries have you been to?
Oh my gosh, I think I've been to about 170 countries, about 170, and I've lived in 17, so,
and
yeah.
Did you visit these countries for work or for pleasure or
for
both?
Work.
Primarily
yeah.
For work.
For work.
Were there particular stories in specific countries that inspired some of this work?
Yes, there are some countries. I'm thinking of Tunisia. I'm just thinking of the last country where I lived, and it was a wonderful place. And I got there 4 days before the revolution happened. 4 days. And we were there through the revolution. And so being there with my husband, who is Iranian, mm-hmm. was really funny because he'd been through a revolution before and he wanted to leave and I didn't, and all kinds of other things. But one of the things I noticed is that people went back to work. They actually went back to work when there was no government. Mm. And I just found that really interesting. And so I thought, I'm going to do something. So I'm going to start embroidering because I was traveling so much. And I thought, that's a really really interesting thing to do. Mm-hmm. So I started doing that, and it just kind of, I'm doing it still. You know?
Now, you've brought a piece with you that we have, which our listeners, of course, can't see, but I would like to at least describe this beautiful gold fabric. What fabric am I looking at here?
Well, you're looking at Thai silk. Huh. And this piece was made as a reaction to an article that was in the Washington Post about female genital mutilation. And I, of course, took a big objection to what the writer had written about it. And so I wrote back into the Washington Post. And so it's all woven in here. And it's, you know, it's just a beautiful piece, and it's just really big. And
you've got this kind of stripe down the middle, and there are different pictures of women stitched even into the fabric.
Yes, there are pictures of different women. And this woman, I'm sorry that you can't see it, but this woman is the young girl that is being violated. Mm. And so I wrote about this in my article and said, you know, I have been a photographer all my life. I have never photographed this kind of thing, but I would never stand by and just watch that and then call it, what did he call it? I think he called it a tribal thing. And I don't think it's a tribal thing. I think it's a crime. So I wrote that, and it was all over the place. It was all in Washington, D.C., and I'm really proud of that. Yeah.
How many pieces do you have in this particular show?
Well, I've got about 4,000.
My goodness.
I know. I've got about 4,000, but they're all labeled. Yeah.
Now, I noticed that one of your hosts is local jazz singer Jackie Allen. How did that come about?
Oh, she's wonderful. She's a good friend of mine. So Jackie Allen and Jody Strauch are both co-hosts. But Jackie Allen is just a great person. She also works at Out of the Box. And so she came over when she saw that I was kind of struggling a little bit with this and said, can I help you? And I said, sure, you can. What would you like to do? And she said, I'll do anything. And she's been doing a lot. Yeah, she's been doing a lot. Yeah.
Now, you both paint and work in textiles. Do you have a preference for one over the other?
I really think of myself as a conceptual artist. And so my work, I brought a bunch of it, but I just brought this up. I have paintings that are in oil, in acrylic, in watercolor, on paper, on Tevar, it's on everything.
I just wondered if one over the other were a certain type of expression for you, or what would move you to use one more so than the other.
Well, you know, I think I'm one of those people who likes what I'm doing last, and so I love the embroidery that I'm doing, and it is a bit different from what I see here. Mm. I notice that embroidery's become popular, but I've been doing it for a long time, and I'm not actually putting in words. I'm just doing shapes and figures and things. Yeah.
An evening with artist Sue Wood is at her studio in Lincoln on May 31st from 7 to 10 p.m. And for more information about this event, or really any event that you hear about today on Friday Live, go to netnebraska.org/radio and locate the Friday Live page, and you can link through to more information. Susan, thank you.
You're most welcome. Thanks.
The University of Nebraska-Omaha is hosting a sensory exhibition, actually inviting guests to please touch the art. KVNO's Corbin Hirschhorn has more.
Tonight on UNO's campus, the Weber Fine Arts Gallery and Osborne Family Gallery will open Sensory, Please Touch the Art 3.0, an exhibit where attendees are encouraged to engage with touch. The annual exhibit began in 2016, the idea of Assistant Professor of Art Education Jeremy Johnson.
It really started with a conversation with my wife. My wife is visually impaired, and so my career is very visually oriented, and we struggled at times to have conversations about our career and our hobbies and stuff like that, because I lacked at the time the ability to describe what it was I was doing in a very rich descriptive language. It was not for her. She couldn't go into a gallery and just touch the painting on the wall. She has to get really close to a particular painting to see it, and alarms go off. You know, Dawson's will ask you to step away from the artworks and things like that.
Sensory 3.0 features 80 pieces from artists in Nebraska, Iowa, Colorado, and Washington. Each has at least some component that extends beyond the visual, textural, or audible features, for example.
I would say that while the artwork is meant to be multisensory, we're encouraging people to engage with the artwork beyond just their eyes. They'll be able to pick artworks up off of podiums. They'll be able to touch the artworks that are on the wall. They'll hear different sounds coming from the artworks. They'll smell the different types of paints or the lacquers that are being used as they get up close to it. And that's something that we're really promoting. Now, one thing that we do want to stress is that even though we're trying to make the gallery extremely accessible, not only just the artworks, but the gallery itself, we're trying to make this available to all persons, not just a particular community. So this is meant to help the sighted community understand art just a little bit different. It's meant to help the blind and low vision have access to art. We're really pushing the boundaries of how galleries are accessible to those with disabilities by making modifications to the gallery for people that are maybe needing audio description or using canes or things along that line. So we have accommodations that way as well.
Sensory 3.0 is a rare experience in the often guarded world of fine art, but perhaps that culture will change with the rise of new ideas and media.
I would like to see it change. I think it has been changing for a little while. I think it still has a long ways to go. There are some artists, even the ones that submitted pieces to our show, that read our call and they emailed in, asked questions like, I'm not even sure if my piece qualifies, because they're so used to thinking about it in terms of a visual aspect that they don't consider somebody actually getting up close to it and physically touching it. Is it always feasible? No, not really. You know, certain things lend themselves better to be touched. A graphite drawing isn't going to, I'm not going to get the same experience. But for some of the more fragile pieces or works that are require a little bit more care for archiving purposes, you know, there are other technologies out there that we're exploring. You know, is it possible to create a 3D model of it, or, you know, through means of 3D printing or using laser cutters, that sort of thing? So we're trying to push those boundaries a little bit more. And, you know, those are things that artists should be considering as they're making their pieces.
Please Touch the Art 3.0 opens tonight, May 17th, at UNO's Weber Fine Arts Gallery and Osborne Family Gallery from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. For more information, visit unomaha.edu. For Friday Live, I'm Corbin Hirschhorn.
I'm Genevieve Randall. Lincoln Choral Artists wrap up another season this Sunday with a concert called Love and Longing, with harpist Melissa Serb and a string orchestra joining them. And joining me to talk about it right now are artistic choral director Jason Horner and harpist Melissa Serb. Good morning to both of you.
Morning.
Morning.
It's great to have you here.
Thanks so much.
Jason, how did you come up with the name and theme for this concert?
It's continuing our theme for the season of Modus Emotus, talking about human emotion, and we wanted to kind of swing back around to our fall theme, which was love is a battlefield, but coming at it from a different perspective. This time it's a little bit more of this, what happens after a lifetime of being connected with someone, and the big piece that Melissa is a part of and our string players Fern Hill really focuses on looking back at how sometimes you're naive on how you think about love and caring for other people.
So is this the kind of main piece of this performance?
It really is. It's about an 18-minute choral piece with Rebecca Shane as mezzo-soprano soloist, featuring string and harps and piano, is one of the bigger undertakings this group has done in a few years, so.
What else will the group be singing in addition to that work?
Well, of course, Melissa's playing a few pieces, and I'll let her chat a little bit about
that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I am playing Song in the Night, which is, I think it kind of fits the theme really well, unintentional, but very longing and kind of romantic piece, but a little bit different. And then a piece called Reflection, which also fit the theme really well. Mm-hmm. And it was written by a composer who, his inspiration was he needed to get away in his apartment, you know, from the busy city. And so it's just like kind of a peaceful, meditative piece.
Huh, so, interesting background to that. That's cool. How often have you performed with a choral group, Melissa?
This is my first time, so I'm super excited. We had a rehearsal last night, and it's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah. Now, full disclosure, you and I have played many gigs together, Melissa. So I happen to know there's a lot that gets, you know, involved in moving a harp around.
Absolutely.
How early do you have to get to
you know, either the rehearsal or the performance to set up and let the harp settle in to the space?
I generally try to do about a half hour so I can, you know, figure out where I'm going and unpack and tune and find a place to store all of my case and dolly, because it's a lot to haul around.
Yes, and you have to tune each time.
Yes.
What vehicle do you carry this thing in?
I have a small SUV that I can schlep it around in.
Right. I just asked that because as a flutist, it really does not matter what car I take. But for the harp, it really does matter. Now, Jason, do you have any hints on what you have in store for next season?
Yeah, we've got a lot of exciting things coming up with the 40th anniversary. I am excited to just get into what is going to be a celebration year. We're commissioning a piece of music from a local composer. We are working with the Lincoln Civic Orchestra to do a concert. We are collaborating with the Lincoln Boys Choir. We are bringing back former directors of the ensemble to do some conducting, and we're setting this up to be a year of celebration and talking about not just what's happened in the last 40 years, but what's going to be going forward after that.
Well, it sounds like this isn't so much as a season closer coming up as just more work ahead for you.
Lots and lots,
with
yes.
The 40th anniversary coming up. Well, Lincoln Choral Artists season closer concert is this Sunday. It's called Love and Longing, with guest harpist Melissa Serb, also guest performer and soloist Rebecca Shane, along with a string orchestra. And I've been talking about the concert with Melissa Serb and Jason Horner. Guys, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Link to more information about this or any event on this morning's show through the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org. Next here on Friday Live, I'm joined by Tracy Tucker, Education Director and Archivist with the Willa Cather Foundation. They host their 64th annual Willa Cather Spring Conference, May 30th through June 1st at the National Willa Cather Center in Red Cloud. Tracy, it's great to have you back on Friday Live.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Is there a particular theme or focus of the Spring Conference this year?
We decided to focus on Cather and her experiences in the theater. So there's a lot of different aspects you can come at that topic from. Cather as a performer herself in the Opera House, or Cather as a theater critic, which she was there in Lincoln for a long time. And finally, Cather as a connoisseur. She enjoyed theater her entire life and had a lot to say about it. So we want to look at all those things while we're all together here in Red Cloud.
And you've got a full slate of things going on surrounding the Spring Conference. There are some artifacts, for example, that are returning to Red Cloud. What are those, and how did that come about?
We're really excited about that. We're going to have a special event on Thursday, May 30th, to welcome some of those objects home. This all comes about through our work with History Nebraska and the transfer of the historic sites and our original Willa Cather Pioneer Memorial collections, which were put together by Mildred Bennett, our founder, way back in the 50s and 60s, and eventually cared for by History Nebraska for many decades. And so now those things are coming home, and we're getting a chance to unbox them and bring them out for our guests. And so it's a really fun thing to do.
There's also an artists organization I noticed that's been featured on Friday Live before, called Impact Nebraska, and they're involved with this year's conference as well.
We've talked with them for a couple of years now after they toured the Impact Ted Kooser exhibit for a long time. And they approached us a couple of years ago now and said, what would you think of us focusing on Willa Cather for one of our Impact exhibits? And we said, you know, we're all in. We think it would be a great idea. And so we're really excited to see what they've come up with.
And Friday, May 31st, you'll host some special guest speakers as part of the conference. One, an award-winning local writer, and the other, NET's own Ron Hall. What will they be doing?
Ron was involved with our organization, as I said, way back in the early days with Mildred Bennett. And Ron is so well known for his work in helping to share the literature of Nebraska with viewers all across the country. And so Ron's going to come back and visit with us as we bring back all of the original WCPM materials and talk about what he remembers of those early days. And so he's sort of our institutional memory here, and that's a great thing. As far as L. Kent Waldemont, he will be here to talk about the parallels between his own career and Willa Cather's career and what he sees as the importance of criticism and arts criticism, particularly in a shared art experience for people in this area.
Now, we haven't even covered yet panels. There's a screening, readers' theater, and a worship service as well featuring handbell choir Bellissimo, plus a performance of a piece called A Little Pleasure, which is a new work written for the stage by Julia Hinton. Can you give us just a brief survey of some of the other performances?
Yeah, we're really excited about Julia's stage performance. We haven't seen it, of course, because this is a brand new work, but Julia's from Hastings originally, and she's put together a small cast that will draw on all kinds of things that we will have been talking about all weekend already. Cather's criticism in the newspapers of different art performances, her own biography, some of her writings, some of her letters. And Julia is a really interesting playwright in that she takes all of those really rich materials and she sort of reorganizes them into a powerful, compact story. And so this, again, will focus on Cather and her relationship with the theater and with performers in the theater. It's new work, so you never really know what it's going to be like. And that's one of the exciting things about theater.
Tracy Tucker is Education Director and Archivist with the Willa Cather Foundation, and we've been talking about the 64th Annual Willa Cather Spring Conference. Getting just a preview of events there, the conference is May 30th through June 1st. There are some events, like the reception for the Impact Nebraska show, Impact Willa Cather, that happen on May 29th, and you'll be able to link to all the details and more on the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org. Tracy, thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for having me. I just put in one last plug that registration will close on May 20th, so hurry and register.
This is Friday Live on NET Radio. Coming up this morning on NET Radio, classical music on Morning Concert, and this afternoon, Laura Black and Classics by Request. Be sure to visit the NET website for podcasts of the show at netnebraska.org/radio. Thanks to everyone who makes Friday Live possible, including Robert Goldberg, engineer James DeShano, and associate producer Dave Hughes. I'm Genevieve Randall.
Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Union Bank, locally owned with a commitment to lasting customer relationships. Union Bank offers customers personal and business banking, as well as wealth management services. Union Bank, member FDIC. And the U.S. Census Bureau, preparing for another survey producing data about the American people and the economy in 2020. For more information about the U.S. Census Bureau's mission and employment opportunities, 2020census.gov/jobs.